With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. On, clinical sexologist, with Xander Keg, licensed clinical social worker. Last week, we had our first episode with Xander talking about his published book, The Third Space, A Nonconformist Guide to the Universe. Let's pick up where we left off last week, which was Xander talking about loving people, regardless of how different they are from us. We may not understand them. We may not necessarily agree with them. But to hate them is not exactly peaceful, and it's not a healthy way to exist and continue living and interacting with people who we will come in contact with who are different from us. Xander, you left it off with loving the person just as we would want others to love us, regardless of their opinions of us. We will replay a small segment from episode 1 to refresh your recall in case that will be helpful. And for those who haven't listened yet and are just tuning into episode 2, this will help segue into the next discussion that Xander covers.
Be the change you want to see. So if you want family members who are respectful, then start by being respectful to yourself and to them. You start with the self. It always starts with the self. We can't expect people to change everything about who they are if we're not willing to do it for ourselves. If we understand that change is difficult and it's incremental and we will make change at a particular pace, then we have to extend that same understanding to the people around us. And we might never change in certain ways, and they might never change either. And can we still love them if they don't change? Would we want people to love us if we didn't change? I was exposed at a very young age, around 9, 10 years old, to systems of thought through my father primarily that included self-awareness. They didn't talk about it in that way. I was enrolled in workshops, and my dad was involved in these human potential workshops back in the days, right? Late 70s, early 80s, Playground, Est. My dad was really into those things. And so self-awareness and also being principled, that was also something that I was taught through that experience, and being your word so that people can trust you, right? That trust is really important. It starts with trusting yourself and then extending from there, not playing the victim. These are direct lessons that I was taught when I would go off for an entire weekend with a bunch of other kids in these workshops. It was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun in those spaces. But this idea of playfulness, the final chapter of my book is called Being Childlike. And I differentiate between being childlike from childish, not throwing a temper tantrum like a child, but it's being playful like a child, tapping into that sense of awe and wonder that a child has, being curious about things, marveling at things. That is something that you see in children all the time. And for most of us, we hit a period of time called adolescence where we get very cynical and angry and want to do the opposite of all those things. I'm not a kid anymore, and you're not the boss of me. And we don't all have the opportunity to pass through adolescence and come out on the other side and go, oh, wait a minute. So I want to bring back some of that wonder and awe and curiosity and marvel and playfulness, that childlike part of ourselves, not inner child, and I'm talking about that kind of thing. It's just that childlike thing. People used to criticize me. I was probably in my late 20s, early 30s, and I would bounce a lot. When I was standing, I would bounce. And people were like, what are you doing? Why are you bouncing? I'm not a kid. And I would say, well, but I'm childlike. I enjoy that. And I would say to people, I'm like Tigger. I'm bouncy, bouncy, bouncy. There's a great book called The Tao of Pooh. And then there's The Day of Piglet. And I think they should do The Chi of Tigger, because a way to learn about Taoism through the Winnie the Pooh characters. And Tigger was bouncy, bouncy, bouncy. And so I would say, that's me. I'm bouncy, bouncy, bouncy. And they would look at me like I was crazy. Why was a late 20-something, 30-something year old talking like that? Because I didn't take myself too seriously. I was probably waiting for a walk sign or something to come on. And I was just probably looking at the clouds and curious. I'm still that way. I don't ever want to lose that energy. But I learned that people were highly critical of that, that they didn't think it was playful. They thought it was immature or just ridiculous, silly. Well, I don't mind being silly. I don't want to be ridiculous, but I don't mind being silly. That's how I end the book. I end it basically talking about maybe if we can tap into that sense of awe and wonder, that it'll give us something different to focus on than whatever is constantly upsetting us.
I wanted to say two things about that. I think personally, I would like to see more playtime in school, throughout school. I'm not talking sports necessarily. I'm just talking about allowing kids and young adults to have some playtime that affords them that learning opportunity of interacting. I think that's what, for me, resonated about your book, is that you help us get through your difficult times that I'm sure many people could relate to in various ways. You put us on a trajectory of, well, this is how I mastered difficult times. And you come to a rather quiet but happy place. You talk about your father. You talk about the evolution of your own development in a really profound way that a lot of people, they're not self-examining. Many people don't self-examine, or they're hypocritical when they do. I'm a firm believer that that play that adults do isn't too different from children, because what it does is it affords us to pull away, as you said, from all the seriousness. We have enough of that in our life. We have way too much of it at times. We really are, I think, on overload. But I think for adults, that playfulness affords us the ability to solve problems. For me, that's what moving does. For me personally, I like to be out walking. I solve things. I'm not necessarily conscientious about it, but I know my brain is doing something. Or when I'm in the garden and I'm touching my plants, because I have a real connection with my plants and my trees, I'm solving something. I think it's not well understood because, like you said, we are told, quiet, grow up, and you're not a kid anymore.
Jonathan Haidt, he's a social psychologist. He teaches at a business school in New York. I think it's like Stern School of Business. And he talks about this quite a bit, about how outside play or he might refer to it as free range. Kids going out like we did when we were kids, older generations, that we went out and nobody really knew where we were. And we were having fun and probably getting into some mischief and learning life's lessons while we were out there. That's missing from a lot of children's lives for a number of reasons. They live more and more urban areas because of all the scare that happened with the kids getting nabbed all the time. Not that that doesn't happen anymore. Of course it does, but it was constantly on the news that somebody was driving by the school in a van and yanking kids into it. I remember those stories. So I think that
Nancy Grace stories.
Yeah, I think people got freaked out and then they had kids and they didn't let them. And a lot of schools have taken recess away where you're just running around on the playground. And so Jonathan Haidt talks about the neuroscience of play, the impact that it has. And when you talk about walking or gardening and that you're problem solving, it's just happening. It's because the mind is focused on something else and it's running its course. For people who might be familiar with EMDR, it's a particular therapeutic intervention where somebody's having you focus with moving your eyes back and forth from left to right. And the person who came up with that therapy technique noticed that when she went out for walks, when you're going out for a walk, you're constantly scanning from left to right. Your area right in front of you. You're looking back and forth. We don't even know we're doing it. It's not like we're consciously going, look left, look right. It's just what our eyes are doing. And it's probably very slowly. It's not like they're darting back and forth. Like there's something in front of us that we need to get away from. And she noticed how just somewhat naturally issues would resolve. Solutions would come into the mind, that ideas would just pop up. Oh yeah. Oh, I could do that. And it would change. And so she thought, I wonder what would happen if we mimicked that left-right with the eyes, the back and forth with the eyes in a therapeutic setting. And she tested it out. And there's been many, many tests of it now. It's considered evidence-based treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. And the Department of Veterans Affairs, Veterans Health Administration, they use it with veterans who have post-traumatic stress disorder from combat or military sexual trauma or whatever it is. So it's a therapeutic technique that came from the observation that when we're out in the world, we're processing all this information and ideas and solutions just come to us.
Let's take our first commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On, and Xander Keg, who usually hosts this program with me, is my guest this hour. He's talking about his published book, The Third Space, A Nonconformist Guide to the Universe. We want to thank our sponsors for supporting our program, and therefore we are grateful for the commercial airtime. We'll be back shortly, so don't go away. Stay tuned.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. On with Xander Keg, who usually hosts this program with me. Let's pick up where we left off.
It's the same thing that happens when we're sleeping. Ideas, solutions come to us. And when is that time? It's when we're in REM sleep, when our eyes are darting back and forth behind our eyelids. So there's something about that, whether it's reproduced in a therapy session, or we're out walking in nature or down the street, or if we are asleep, that there's something about that eye movement that happens that helps us feel calm and helps us come up with novel ideas and solutions for things.
Yeah, I think that's the symphony of the brain network. Really knows how to coordinate that world. Yeah, it is fascinating. Is there something that you feel we Well, I know there's lots we didn't cover, but is there something you feel this is the time to mention it?
The thrills of my life is that I've been able to work with a gentleman by the name of Daryl Davis. And Daryl Davis wrote the foreword for my book. He is a in-demand man. We have had the pleasure of working together over the last few years from time to time. But the fact that he said yes when I asked him, and he took the time to write a very, very personal foreword, the appreciation I have and the gratitude that I have. For people who don't know who Daryl Davis is, I highly recommend you look him up. Daryl Davis is a Black man who makes time in his life to have sit-down conversations face-to-face with members of the Ku Klux Klan and neo-Nazi groups to find out the answer to one question. Why do you hate me when you don't even know me? And he sits and he listens and he engages with them for an hour or several hours over the course of days or weeks or months or years. And the reward for that is that, I don't know, somewhere between 200 and 300 lifelong members of supremacist organizations have left those organizations, have renounced their membership. And as a result, many other people have done the same thing. One person in particular who was a national leader of one of these groups, when he said, I am no longer going to be a participant in that movement with those people in those places, he left. And I think it's somewhere around a dozen different chapters, I guess, of the organization. They shuttered. There were no members left. They just went away. And that's because one brave man learned how to regulate his emotions and tolerate distress, mitigate conflict, and he sat down in front of people who hated him, and he treated them like a human being. And so he and I are both part of something called the Pro-Human Foundation, and this message of treating human beings with dignity and respect, because that's how we would want to be treated, regardless of what they think and believe, how they vote, none of that should matter. I'm so fortunate that I met him, because although I was already doing the work I was doing, meeting him, it gave me the image, right? The very image of person doing the thing that most people would think is crazy, dangerous, unnecessary, foolish. And Daryl said, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to treat these neo-Nazis and these Klansmen like they're human beings. I'm going to treat them with respect. I think the results of that work speak for themselves. And so I'm just truly honored that he agreed to write the foreword. I highly recommend people can go on Amazon and you can read a little bit of the book, and maybe for free. And I think maybe you can read his foreword, if nothing else.
We will be taking our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg, who is talking about his published book, The Third Space, A Nonconformist Guide to the Universe. We are grateful to our sponsors and therefore for the commercial airtime. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg, who is my guest this hour. Let's pick up where we left off. How did the two of you meet? Was it through an organization?
Daryl and I met through an organization called the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. And even though he was involved and I was involved, there's people out there who would refer to FAIR, as it's called, as a racist and transphobic organization. But I do the work that I do. Daryl does the work that he does. He's not a racist. And I'm not a transphobe, but that's the organization we met. We were both working. We were advisors to that organization. We were both part of what was called Fair and Diversity or Fair Diversity. We were doing corporate diversity trainings that used this pro-human model. And then Daryl went off with some other people and founded the Pro-Human Foundation. And so I'm also part of Pro-Human Foundation as an advisor. Daryl is an ambassador to that organization. And so he is leading right now our first cohort of ambassadors in training to take the principles of pro-human and nonviolence and conflict resolution, learn from his example and take it into their communities, their workplaces, their families. I'm an instructor in that program, the ambassador program, and I'm an advisor with the Pro-Human Foundation. So I'm just happy to be able to continue doing that work and to continue being able to do it with Daryl.
I love that as members of either a board or committee, whatever it is that you have joined over the course of your lifetime, that you're hands-on and really interested in the work. Sometimes I don't always see that or I don't always feel that. And I think it's a shame because when people collaborate, it's amazing how powerful that is and how that just that embodiment of people working together can bring such profound change to a community. So kudos to you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm involved in another organization that Daryl has done work with, also called Braver Angels. And that's a similar, it's a national organization. It was founded just after the Clinton-Trump election results because of all of the conflict that ensued. And so they put together this organization to depolarize families and couples and society, communities. And so I became involved with them in 2018 and started getting more involved with them a little bit in 2020. And then in 2022, really started to do direct work with them. And I was able to start an LGBT caucus within Braver Angels a little over a year ago. And I'm part of a mental health forum that's part of Braver Angels. And there's so much, right? No matter what you're interested in, film or music or workshops, there's so many. I think it's $12 a year to be a member of Braver Angels. And then you have access to everything. And so, of course, the message of Daryl Davis is very popular within Braver Angels. And I learned about Braver Angels through my work with FAIR. Oh, no, actually, I think I learned about FAIR through Braver Angels. If I think back in the time frame. Yeah, it was FAIR. It was Braver Angels first and then FAIR. There are so many different organizations. There's something called the Brave Network. And there's almost 400 organizations in the United States primarily that are now connected with Braver Angels to start working on all these different levels, all in so many different communities, all these different workplaces and cities and counties and states. And there's so many organizations working on so many issues, but depolarization is the one thing that they all have in common. I love it. I love doing that work. I couldn't do that work. Well, I guess I could. There are a lot of people who are troubled or dysregulated or just chaotic and full of rage that are involved in organizational work and activism work. I mean, I guess I was involved in activism when I was younger, but I'm no longer fueled by my anger. Doesn't mean I don't get angry. Doesn't mean that I don't think there's injustice. Doesn't mean I don't want to see things improve. I just know that anger, that fuel isn't long acting. I need something else to be able to stay committed, right? I need to be able to have a different fuel than anger. Anger is just too temporary and has short-term outcomes, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think also it can burn people out. It's a lot of energy.
Yeah, I've actually, over the years, people have asked me, how do you not get burnt out? Well, I have good boundaries. I say no more often than I say yes. And I only take on things that I actually am passionate about and want to do. I don't say yes because I think it'll get me social cachet or access to something or brownie points. I don't care about any of that. And I do all of it for no pay. So I don't get paid for doing any of these things through the Pro-Human Foundation or the work that I do with Braver Angels. This is just volunteer work, but it's for a good cause, right? Depolarization is a very, in my opinion, is a very good cause.
Yeah, I don't get paid for a lot of the stuff I do. I wouldn't be there. If I were, I don't think I'd be there. It would shift the dynamics of my commitment, not because I would reject financial support. That isn't it. I think it can shift the dynamic of why you even join in the first place. And I think that shift has to do with your passion, anyone's passion.
Money is pros and cons, right? I tend to be a behind the scenes person pretty often. Most people have no idea the things I'm doing because it's all behind the scenes. All they see is, oh, you have a podcast, or you sit on panels, or you do these public presentations. Oh, yeah, but that's actually a really small fraction of what I do, because I'm an introvert by nature. And so I can't do a whole lot of extroverted things, or then I'd probably burn out, right? So I know how to balance that so that I don't.
Yeah, I think we're very similar in that way.
Well, this has been fun, On. Thank you so much for wanting to have this conversation and share more about my book. Can I tell people about my other podcast if they want to go listen?
Yeah, please do. I think that's important.
Yeah, so it's called The Third Space Podcast, and it's over on Substack. So it's like thethirdspace.substack.com. And I'm interviewing people that consider themselves nonconformists or black sheep or people who are just following their own inner tune. So I've only published one episode. I've recorded two. And so I'm just going to periodically release them. So I don't have a schedule that I'm keeping yet. It's totally DIY. So unlike these beautifully edited podcast shows, thank you, On, for your brilliance and in all the technology of the podcast. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. So I'm just recording them and putting them up on Substack. So you'll hear a little noise in the beginning at the end when I'm hitting record and stop. So.
Well, that's true journalism.
Yeah, there you go.
It's not tampered.
Transparency.
Yeah, that's the best, actually. We've pulled away from that. We now want everything cleaned up.
That's right. And, you know, we don't cut a lot out when we do our edits. It might be the ums and the ahs, or sometimes people cough. We don't edit to change the story in any way. We don't need to, right? Our guests have wonderful, wonderful stories to tell. So
we have come to the end of the hour. We want to thank all of you for tuning in this hour. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we did. Tune in next time to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. And thank you for listening.